Good evening, everyone, and welcome to eBible's question and answer tonight. This evening, we're going to take a look at the Bible with any questions or comments that anyone may have, and each person is invited to share whatever on your mind, excuse me, by raising your hand. If you're in Pal Talk and entering your question into the text, the moderator there will then relay your question into this room. If you're listening by phone or through Skype, you can hit *6 and then the number 1. That'll raise your hand and put you into the queue to ask your question. And then there's an automatic order in the conference room that's followed. And we just go to the next caller, and you'll be prompted to ask your question or to make your comment. Excuse me. And I'll try as much as possible to respond by going to the Bible, as the Bible is the Word of God. But at this time, we are going to open up the room. And once again, please feel free to say whatever on your mind regarding a question or a comment. Now, let's go to the first caller tonight. Welcome to our time of question and answer. Good evening.
Hi, Chris.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Okay, I got a question and a comment. It's kind of related, about confidence and understanding and then consequence. I'll try to be articulate as possible. I've always had confidence in Family Radio and Harold Camping and yourself when I hear you guys speak about, you know, the Bible and stuff. And back in 92, when 1994 question mark came out, you know, I really expected something to happen, but I did read the book and I knew it was only a possibility. Then years later, because I had confidence in what Family Radio was teaching, because they taught me that about election and the using the whole Bible as the whole in its own dictionary and not just the New Testament like the churches were teaching me when I was younger. They focused on that. We found out later, you know, all right, that was a half of the latter rain and the Great Tribulation, and then May 21st came, and again, we thought something physical was going to happen, and nothing did, and then October, and then same thing, but I've always had confidence in what I thought was the correct understanding of what was going on. Now, you had already had mentioned in a previous show that that you would lose your own confidence if nothing happened this March. And what would be the consequence of all this understanding over the years, 15, 16, 18 years this has been going on, from my point of view, that I've been paying attention, that nothing happens? I have confidence in what you're saying, because I believe that I hear other people say, oh, it's not, you know, don't set a date, and it could happen 20, 30 years from now, but it doesn't fit with all the teachings and all the understanding that's happened over the years. It doesn't fit to say it's going to come years from now, and that all these, like, you know, the second day of this, you know, the May 21st and all these other dates, they all fit. They all fall in line. Now, if nothing does happen, are we missing some kind of understanding? Is there another meaning to what all this might be? Like, you know, we thought there was going to be a physical earthquake, and then in 5 months of pain and suffering and the rapture and all this stuff, but nothing happened. Now, March comes and nothing happens, hypothetically. I'm not saying it's not gonna. What would be the understanding at that point? You know, I would lose confidence totally in myself, thinking that I had no understanding whatsoever. Do you get where I'm coming at?
Well, the problem is, and this may not be an issue, but people have asked, what will you do if it doesn't happen? And I've responded. Now, there is a lot of things going into why I responded that way. It's just circumstances in my life would indicate that I have to go back out and work and provide for my family again. That and other things. And one of the things is that I teach, and I can only speak for myself, but I teach because I think I'm teaching the truth. And it, you know, I know there's people out there who think that, well, you're just trying to make excuses, especially since May 21, and trying to find things to keep this going. But actually, that's not true. I and I'm sure others have gone back to the Bible open-minded with the question, oh Lord, what happened after May 21? What are you doing? And then there was a lot of information that came out that it was a spiritual judgment, that it was a time of great victory for Christ and his overall salvation plan. It was the completion of saving all of the elect, and also the judgment of Satan and the judgment, a severe judgment on the churches and congregations, and a judgment on the world, in that there's no more salvation. All that we saw during the 5 months leading up to October. And yet we still had some things wrong in thinking that October 21 would be the date and that would be it. And this was God's plan. I don't think there's any way that we could have come to realize that God intended to double the 5 months of judgment. Also, we had the wrong date for the conclusion of the 5 months as October 21, and that also hindered us from seeing what God was doing. And it's only when you get past some of these things that obviously we realize, well, the last day of Tabernacles was not the end of the world, and then we have to think and pray for wisdom, and then we realize, well, we have to search the Bible. What's the other possibilities? And then if it's God's good pleasure, he opens up more information. And he's done that with Purim. And, you know, honestly, I was fully ready to just say it was all wrong. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what we were just off somehow, and leave it at that. And then continue from there. But in following the methodology, this is what I was referring to when I talked about confidence. Following the methodology that I know is right, and I know it's true and faithful, and it's what God says in his word. That's how it can be trusted. It's not a methodology taught by seminaries. It's not taught by theologians. They have other kinds of methodologies to come to truth. But this is the Bible's methodology. Compare spiritual with spiritual, scripture with scripture, here a little, there a little, harmonize your conclusions, look for the deeper spiritual meaning, and we're applying these things. Now, this is why I still believe that May 21 was Judgment Day, why there was 5 months of torment and now doubled, and why I expect Purim to be the end, because it all fits the proper methodology. It all is coming from the Bible. It's not just something we tried to make fit. You can never try to make these kinds of things. I mean, you can try, but they never would fit to throw these things together. And since it's all a result of the proper method, the proper method of study. If, let's say, somehow we were to go beyond March, then I would just not know. I would not know where to turn as far as going to the Bible. What do you do with all the information that has been checked and rechecked and still is in place? And that's what I meant, that there would be a problem that I would not know how to really
how to resolve that.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Well, I always had confidence in what you had to say. You know, when I heard you on eBible or on Family Radio, much like Mr. Camping, you guys were on the same page, and I understood it. When I listened to other people who didn't have that methodology, just like you said, I knew that they weren't coming from a place of truth, because what they said didn't fit. And what's been going on this whole time fits. But the only thing is, it seems that we've misunderstood physical things and spiritual things. We've mixed them up because we're physical beings, and that's how we're going to see things. But when it came out about Purim and Esther, because I've read Esther several times, and now I understand it's a whole other deeper spiritual meaning, I jump for joy. I'm like, it's not over. And then the biblical time calendar, we're still in 2011 until March is over, you know, according to the biblical time calendar, and I knew it would fit. So I'm just, you know, I'm confident that everything is correct, because it always has been over the years. Every time I've been wrong, I've been corrected by people like yourself and Harold Camping, showing me like election and predestination and what heaven and hell really are now, and all these new teachings that were always there, but the understanding was wrong based on what our churches taught us. But now I'm just curious, is there something that it could mean something else, like, you know, like all these other things we thought meant something else, but it really didn't? You know, now Purim and in March 7th, 8th, and 9th, or
yeah,
whatever.
Well, yeah, I know. But I don't see anything else, and that's why,
guess,
that's why we're still the problem isn't the Bible. The problem is us, and
it's
the problem
us, yeah,
is our weakness, and we have been humbled, and we're at the point where everything fits together very well. But I don't doubt what the Bible says. I do doubt my ability to understand the Bible completely, and we do not have to blow the trumpet to warn the people.
It's done
with this information, because that's already been done, and the Bible does say, if the trumpet give an uncertain sound, who will prepare himself for the battle? And that was leading up to the battle of Judgment Day, that all the world heard a very definite warning. This is not the case. Some people say, well, if you're not sure, don't say it, don't share it. And that is not a hindrance at all. We're sharing what we know, and we're allowing the Bible to do the convincing. There is recognition that we have learned things after the fact. But, you know, that just won't go on indefinitely, that we continue to learn after this and after this and after this. I think this is all the information. When we look at Purim and the Feast of Lots, and we find, I'd like to look at some of these verses. They're sprinkled throughout the Bible, but the lot has everything to do with the distribution of the land of Canaan. It says in Numbers 26, And in verse 53, unto these the land shall be divided for an inheritance according to the number of names. To many thou shalt give the more inheritance, and to few thou shalt give the less inheritance. To everyone shall his inheritance be given according to those that were numbered of him. Notwithstanding, the land shall be divided by lot according to the names of the tribes of their fathers. They shall inherit according to the lot, shall the possession thereof be divided between many and few. And we know that this feast of Purim is basically the feast of lots, and it's perfectly designed by God in order to bring his people to the end of the feast. And the last day of Purim is a day of rest after they kill their enemies, after all the enemies of the Jews are destroyed, and that, in a sense, they stand in their lot. As we read in Psalm 16, in verse 5, Jehovah is the portion of mine inheritance and of my cup. Thou maintainest my lot. The lines are fallen unto me in pleasant places. Yea, I have a goodly heritage. And this, again, many, many times, this word lot has to do with inheritance. And that is exactly what takes place at the end of the world. The child of God receives his eternal inheritance. I was looking at also Hebrews 10 again, and it says in verse 35, cast not away therefore your confidence, which has great recompense of reward. For ye have need of patience, that after ye have done the will of God, ye might receive the promise. And then it goes on to say, for yet a little while, and he that shall come will come and will not tarry. Now, what is the promise? Well, over in Hebrews 9, verse 15, it says, and for this cause he is the mediator of the New Testament, that by means of death, for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the first testament, they which are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance. And we've rightly understood Hebrews 10 and 35 through the end. God is really used to, I think, speak to his people since May 21. Don't just throw it all away, as some, I think, have been too quick to do. Don't just throw it all away as far as your confidence in the reward of God's great gift of salvation. You have need of patience, and that means the trying of our faith, which develops patience or works patience, that after you have done the will of God in finally bringing the gospel to all the world, that had never been done before. But it was God's will to do it and warn the whole world. After that, it goes on to say, after you have done the will of God, ye might receive the promise or the inheritance, because you receive the promise of the inheritance. And that word promise has everything to do with the inheritance. And the inheritance is given by lot. And so in this very verse, God is, in an indirect way, referring to the distribution of the land of the kingdom of heaven, in a figure, to his people, which will be accomplished by lot, by the lines falling unto us in pleasant places.
Well, I appreciate you give me so much time and so much information. It helps me out immensely. And it was a pleasure talking to you, and may God bless, and we can hang on together until the end comes.
All right. Well, thank you for your questions and comments. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to eBibles Question and Answer. Excuse me. Hello.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good evening.
Good. God bless you. The gentleman who just asked you a couple of questions, I received my answer. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for making that statement. And let's go to Michael from Pal Talk. Please, go ahead.
Our first question from Pal Talk tonight comes from Bonson172. He asks if you have had any contact with Mr. Camping about what we are learning from the Book of Esther.
No. All I know is, I don't know how long ago now, maybe 6 to 8 weeks, there were a couple of people close to Mr. Camping who printed out the first two Esther studies in very large print and sent it to him. And I believe he did look that over. I think that I know Family Radio's position is they do not want to get involved in another date. And I would assume that's Mr. Camping's position also. But thank you for that question. And do we have another one from Pal Talk?
Yes. Josiah asks, it seems many have created studies in an array of fanciful wording as seemingly contesting the timeline in Esther. Yet when we go by the NASA timeline, which has been based by astronomers and other scientists that had theoretical applications to their theories of the moon, this would seem to throw off the timeline from, the dates of Christ's birth, the demonstration at the cross, the resurrection, on the Sunday morning, and also Pentecost, in 33 AD that began the church age. Can you give the people here an explanation of what's going on with those that contest the timeline with outside sources like NASA, and yet it seems correct, but it really isn't?
Well, I'm looking into this right now. Now, I know what this person's referring to, and I know it's incorrect, and I know it's wrong. Now, it's basically a study that is saying that we were off a day on the 17th day of the second month. We were off a day on the last day of Tabernacles, and we're off a day on the Feast of Purim. Basically, this is a result of this person's understanding when they try to discern when the new moon comes, and the Hebrew calendar is based on partly on the sightings of new moons, and also in factoring in some other things. NASA has an observatory that sees the new moon much sooner than, say, the traditional way the Jewish people have been sighting the new moon, through just physical observation of someone in Israel. And this can get complicated, but you know, the way that some people talk about this, it would leave Israel, just looking at that, it would leave Israel with no way of knowing exactly when their feasts could be observed, a year in the future or even months in the future. It would really leave them dependent on each individual month. They could not plan anything until they had a sighting, and it would only be good for 1 month. Now, just from reading the Bible, and we can know that just is not the case. that Israel would be able to plan things in advance. Now, look at it this way. Mr. Camping, who studied this for quite a while, felt confident enough to publish the date of May 21, October 21, years in advance. But if you were to take the results of this person's study, this recent study, there would be no way you could ever look any length of time into the future and determine exactly when a particular date would, a particular feast would fall on a particular day, or what, even what Hebrew day matched which Gregorian day. And it just really, it's chaotic. That kind of idea. There is a way of determining this. And I do not think that God allowed his people to proclaim to the world May 21, which was the underlying Hebrew day, was the 17th day of the second month, and then be wrong. And that's exactly what this study is putting forth, that it was not the underlying day. The underlying 17th day happened the day earlier. And that was never presented even as a possibility leading up to May 21. And it's looking at these things, I think, in a way that is not correct. But before I say any more, I'm trying to learn as much as I can, and in order to say exactly why this is not correct and how we can know for sure. And I'm trying to look into that. I was today, and I'll continue to try and do that, and then discuss it as soon as I can. But we can be sure that Israel, the nation of Israel today, is operating on a correct calendar. And even though there could be some difficulties here and there, over the course of time, these things have been corrected. And God would have, I'll just leave it at that for now, and we'll discuss this more in the next day or two. But thank you for that question. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to eBible Fellowship's question and answer.
Yeah, hi, Chris. I was looking at it's Revelation 18:6 again. And when I was looking at her, she was going to, reward her even as she rewarded you. How is it that the Babylon has rewarded the true believers? You did kind of explain that, but what I'm looking at is that Babylon rewards the true believers with basically she's giving false gospels or she's in doubt of the word of God, and the true believers' efforts to bring the gospel, that was our reward in return. That's what we got. And so I'm wondering, is really a question of the timing of these doubles that are mentioned in this verse, as to when is the double coming upon the true believer, and when will the double come upon Babylon? Up until now, we've thought that the doubling upon Babylon was going on right now. But what we're really seeing is that the people in the world, they're marrying and giving in marriage. They don't really have any understanding or recognition of what's going on as the Bible is being taught. They're oblivious, and they're not really going to know anything until the very end, when God brings it upon them as a big surprise. So what I was wondering is the double that Babylon offers to the true believers, isn't that what's really going on now? And then at the end, she will receive her double, which will be the second death. Can you comment?
Well, yeah. excuse me a second. Okay. In Revelation 18, it's describing the fall of Babylon, which we know identifies with May 21, because Babylon fell after 70 years, and that 70-year period, it was a historical picture of the actual 23-year Great Tribulation. And so now it's the fall of Babylon. It's time for Babylon to come under the wrath of God, the judgment of God. And Babylon, it says, if we go back to verse 3, all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Babylon is Satan's kingdom in the world, including the church. And just look at this 23-year period wherein Babylon has been reigning during the Great Tribulation. And what do we find? We find apostasy in the churches that it just has never even been close to being anything like it in the history of the church, with just about everything. Nothing was left unturned or perverted. Nothing was left in its purity. The gospels, the doctrines of the churches and congregations have been assailed on just about every point. And then what about the world, which is also Babylon? What has happened over this 23 years? Just think back to 1988. It seems so long ago. And for those of us who were old enough, or some people may not be old enough, but we can remember, of course, it wasn't a perfect world. There was a sinful world, a cursed world, and there was a lot of problems then too, and things were getting increasingly worse. However, when we just see the tremendous magnification of sin in the world, there were no computers, or at least they were only maybe the government and super corporations had them. We didn't have the access to evil things that we have now, and the world is just being given over to sin like it never has in the history of the world. Now, where were God's people? Where were the elect? Well, we were in the church for a portion of this time, then we came out, but we've always been in the world. So Babylon has definitely impacted us during the reign of Babylon, and it has grieved us, the child of God, tremendously. It has brought great sorrow of mind and heart to the believers when we see the way the church has gone, when we see what's happening in the world on Sundays. Sundays never were like this before. It's just like any other day. And yet I remember a time when most businesses were closed on Sunday, and it wasn't that long ago. There were blue laws that were in effect in America, and yet they've been trampled underfoot. Now, the word torment is also translated as vexed in 2 Peter chapter 2. It says in verses 7 and 8, and deliver just lot vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. That's not the word. It's the same English word, but that's not the Greek word, the underlying Greek word. It's in verse 8. For that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. In other words, we could read that Lot, and he was a righteous man, thereby typifying the children of God who are made righteous by Christ. Lot's a type of the believer, that in seeing and hearing as he lived in Sodom, and the things that he saw and the things that he heard with the the great wickedness of that city. And Sodom is an example of the world at the end of time, and also the church, that those things tormented, we could say, his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. That's the word torment, the same word that's in Revelation 9, verse 5, 5 months of torment. And so it's the righteous soul, it's the new born-again spirit that God has placed within his people. And that is a pure and perfect heart, pure and perfect soul. And when that new nature is in this world with the tremendous wickedness, it naturally grieves. And this is the torment that Babylon has given to the believers over the 23-year Great Tribulation, sorrow of heart. And so that's what God is saying in Revelation 18, verse 6, reward her even as she rewarded you. That is, pay her, and double unto her double according to her works. In the cup which she has filled, fill to her double. And the cup has to do with the wrath of God. It is the cup that Christ drank of in the Garden of Gethsemane. It is the cup filled with the wrath, with the wine of the wrath of God, and it is to be poured out to Babylon, the world, including the church, for 5 months. That was the judgment of Revelation 9. The locusts were loosed, and they were to torment men for 5 months. But then God is saying here, double it. That's the payment. I want you to double it. And that's why it goes on to say in verse 7, how much she has glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her. And now God is speaking as though we're the ones, the believers, who mete out the judgment or fill the cup. But of course that's him, that's his role. He's the judge. We're only the messengers. We're only the ones who share the information. And that's exactly what we've been sharing. The door shut on May 21. No more salvation. At first we were saying for 5 months. And then we learned, oh, it's 10 months. It so happens in the book of Esther that when Haman is killed, he's hanged on the 17th day of the second month. There is a 10-month space of time, or 294 days, from that point until the last day of the Feast of Purim. And this matches exactly a double 5-month period of 147 days. Now, someone had a good comment or a good question and pointed out, well, it just sounds like you want to, excuse me, it just sounds like you want to make it fit. You had the goal in mind of Purim, and so you just want to double the 5 months because it falls on the Feast of Purim, as though it were by design, our design, or man's design, that we do this. However, we have to keep in mind that it would not fit unless we had the date of Tishri 17 or 717 in the Genesis account. If God had just said 150 days, it would not fit. If we had stayed with 153 days, it would not fit. But it so happens we were given a date in the flood account itself, which was 5 months later, 217 until 717. And then when we take that date and put it into the Hebrew calendar over this last year since 217, it works out to 147 days and 147 days. We didn't come up with a date. God gave the date of Tishri 17. Tishri 18 or 19 or any other date would not have fit, only Tishri 17. Also, we didn't write Revelation 18 and point out the context that it's Babylon's fall, and that identifies with May 21. And who wrote this verse that we are to double unto her double, that we are to fill the cup double, and God wrote it. He's the one who wrote it, and he also wrote in verse 7, so much sorrow and torment give her, and that's the very word that is the same word as 5 months of torment. And God is the one linking the punishment of Babylon with the date May 21 and the 5 months of torment, which we had understood to be the punishment, and he's the one saying, double it. And when we do, it happens to fall from Tishri 17 on Adar 15, the last day of Purim. I don't think that can be contrived. Too many things have to fit. We have to have that Tishri 17 date. We have to have biblical guidance and direction in telling us to double it, and then it has to fall. You could double many things in a Bible and wouldn't fall on any kind of significant date. But in this case, it falls on the very date that we're looking at because of what we read earlier in the book of Esther concerning Haman's death on the 17th day of the second month. So,
I think you answered my question really when you got to the point where you mentioned the 5 months in Revelation 9, because that really, I forgot about that. That's when they were tormented for 5 months. So that has to be taken into account, which I had forgotten. But you did make a good point, because if you had gone from the 17th day of the second month and then the 17th day of the seventh month, and then if you tried to jump to the 17th day of the 12th month, you wouldn't add up. It would be 5 months plus 5 months, but it wouldn't be anything significant. And it's really interesting that Purim ends up with these two periods that are very significant. And I think it can't be overlooked. Okay, it was a great answer. It was a lot more than I expected, and I thank you for it.
All right, thank you for those verses and your question. Let's go to the next person. Welcome to eBibles Question and Answer.
Ezekiel asks, if you could please check Daniel chapter 9 and the verse he's interested in particular is verse 20. It seemed that Daniel may have been interceding on behalf of the people of Israel. Could that be compared to when Esther interceded for her people?
Well, yeah, that's interesting. We do know the context of Daniel 9. If we go back to verse 1, in the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, that would be 539, and that would be at the completion of the 70-year reign of Babylon, and now Darius or Cyrus has taken the kingdom. And then verse 2 says, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by books the number of the years, whereof the word of Jehovah came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. So actually, even though it's not focused on the very day that Babylon fell, it is focused on the very year. And maybe in that sense, that could fit, that idea could fit, because Daniel does intercede for his people and confess the sins of himself and his people to God. So that's a interesting possibility. Thank you for those verses and that idea. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to our question and answer tonight.
Oh, yes. Good evening, Chris. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
How are you doing?
Doing well.
My question, I have an Esther question, and that's related to the seven people in the court who are named in the king's court in chapter 1. And it's verse 14, the seven princes of Persia. Well, actually, in first chapter, verse 10, they mention seven chamberlains, but then in the 14th, they mention the princes. I just wondered if you had made any connection between the persons, the seven persons in the king's court, to any other verses like the seven spirits and revelations or any of that. And then my other question related to, if you remember back in 1994 when the rapture, after it didn't happen, though another date I understand was set up in 1995 in March. And I don't know if that was to follow Purim back in 95, but I'd be just kind of interested to know if Mr. Camping maybe thought that it would happen in the Purim period around 1995 when it didn't happen in 1994. If you remember that, or if you had heard of that earlier prediction happening. And I guess my last question was just, comment, if you had gotten a chance to post that someone you said had done a study on the doubles found in the Book of Esther, and I just wondered if you had a chance to post that somewhere, and I'd like to read that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, as far as the seven chamberlains and the seven, let's see, where were they? The princes? Seven princes. I think it might relate to the seven spirits of God that we find a couple of times mentioned in the Bible. I really couldn't, strongly lock it in except for the number. See, it says in Zechariah 4 in verse 10, for who has despised the day of small things? For they shall rejoice and shall see the plummet in the hand of Zerubbabel with those seven. They are the eyes of Jehovah, which run to and fro through the whole earth. That's just one of the verses that mentions the seven. But I really haven't spent a lot of time on that. We do know the chamberlains were eunuchs, and the princes would have been more his counselors, and so they would identify with maybe the seven spirits of God. Your second question about 1994, from what I remember, yes, Purim was being looked at, along with a few other dates or Purim in the year 1995. The difference is that I would not think that Purim is the time for Christ's coming. Just like I right now, I do not think the time of the end of the flood in May is the time of Christ's coming, because there's nothing from the Bible that is pointing to May except for the flood account. When we look other places, there's no indicators besides that. And I think that was the case back in 94. It was just looking at the Feast of Purim itself and the language, and there's language here that relates to Judgment Day. That's nobody can question that. When the Jews are delivered and all their enemies are slain, that perfectly identifies with Judgment Day. And I think it was just a more general sort of tie-in that was being made. We thought Christ would come. I'm thinking back in 94 in September, he didn't. So therefore, here's another feast. Perhaps it's this. And that's not the case this time. We're not just grabbing for straws. We're not reaching out to just anything that might be possible. But we believe that Purim is it because God has linked it. He has tied it together once we discovered what happened in the 17th day of the second month in the book of Esther. That related it to May 21. And also it related it to this coming Feast of Purim. Some people have said, oh, that's a good find, that Haman was killed on the 17th day of the second month, but I don't think it's going to happen this year. Well, then it's not a good find at all, because this tie-in runs out of time. There's no year involved. We don't need to know the year actually that it was taken place in the book of Esther. All we need is that date, and then we see from that date within the book itself, there's an ongoing timetable or time span leading to the Feast of Purim just 10 months later. And if we would go beyond March, it will not have any kind of tie-in to 2013 or 2015 or any other year. It only identifies with this coming Purim and no other time.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Chris. Appreciate your study.
Someone did send me. I'll try to post it in the Facebook group. It's not really. It's more like twos. When I read it, it's seeing a lot of twos in the Book of Esther. So I'll copy that and paste it in the Facebook group and maybe in the Time and Judgment group.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Okay. Have a good night.
Thank you too.
Let's go to the next person. Welcome to eBibles Question and Answer.
Yeah, Chris, Michael Ray. Hey, I was looking at that study that somebody posted on Facebook about the lunar calendars are off and stuff like that. And I'd done some pretty good work on that, I thought. NASA has it set for 4-3. Problem with that is NASA's takes into account the wobble of the Earth. They actually calculate that in. It's pretty intense. I just figured I'd just throw that out there for you. Maybe you can look into it a little bit more. Also, there's several other groups that have it posted as 3-5 and 3-4. The one observers, I call them observers because they actually look for the moon to, you know, peak there, you know, around the, you know, time that it all happens. And they have it as 4-4, but the deal is that they have it marked as 6 p.m., 6:37, 6:38 p.m. on 4-4, which we know that's the next day at sundown. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why they – I couldn't find any reason why they didn't put it as 4-5. I just couldn't understand that. And then we have the actual Jewish calculations, and they use a pretty pretty wild formula to make sure that the Passover and a lot of the feasts line up within the spring. It keeps it in the spring period so it doesn't get moved. And I think that's the, a lot of that stuff is like you know, pretty solid stuff, I think. Anyway, that was my comment. I have a question that I'd like to address because I'm not sure what the answer is. But if God is God is light and Satan comes as an angel of light, does witchcraft come from Satan or one of his angels?
Where do you tie in? Which, when Satan comes as an angel of light, it means he's coming with the gospel to look like Christ. So I don't understand your mentioning witchcraft.
Basically, like Saul went to the Witch of Endor, and Nebuchadnezzar had a group of sorcerers and whatnot. And the Bible says we're supposed to stay away from all that stuff. My understanding is that Satan, he wants to be like God. He wants to exalt his own throne or being above God. I mean, it sounds like he wants to be like God. He wants to, you know, he wants to look like God. He wants to be an angel of light, like God is, you know, light. And I had somebody ask me this question, you know, so where's witchcraft come from? You know, if we're not supposed to deal with sorcery or the zodiac signs and all this other stuff. And that to me doesn't seem to fit, you know, with Satan's dominion, but it could fit with his angels, because we know that there's demonic beings.
Well, I see what you're saying. Now he comes as an angel of light, but it doesn't mean he comes exclusively as an angel of light. He's out there in many different ways, wherever there is deceitfulness and lying, Satan is involved. It's just that people of the world tend to think they identify him more with haunted houses and witches and goblins and things like that, and not so much with the pastor in the pulpit, one of his emissaries, and so that's how he can more easily deceive people, because they're caught off guard by the idea that false gospels are the working of Satan, and remember what the Bible tells us, that the Bible relates witchcraft with the sin of rebellion and stubbornness, and so there's many aspects of rebelliousness and stubbornness involved in false gospels. So it could actually even point to something like that. Now, as far as NASA and all the various ways, well, I'll just comment on NASA because we're at the end of time tonight, end of our time. NASA has a super capability today with their observatory, highly technical, but Israel did not have the benefit of NASA aiding them throughout their history and for many, many centuries. And yet God worked out the new moons and the feast days and the calendars, and the people of Israel had no difficulty. So to come to a point where we cannot say that NASA is the determiner, it's not. It's not the determiner of when the new moon is. You know, God determines that. I hope to learn something. There was a friend who said that he had asked Mr. Camping some years ago at one of the Bible conferences how he could be so sure about dates in the future. And that's really the question, because if you read some of the things that have been written, you can't be sure about anything in the Hebrew calendar. And I don't think that's accurate at all. And this individual said that Mr. Camping gave a formula. And it's one I think we're familiar with. The number of days in a year, 365.2422. First it began with a particular date that was locked in, and I think it was the Passover date back in 33 AD. And then you have to know the number of days in a year, and you have to know the number of days in the lunar month. And then there's a particular formula. I'm going to try and learn that formula, because then that would avoid all these things. Then we are working with the sun, moon, and stars, because it is by that we have the knowledge that 1 year is precisely 365.2422, that each lunar month is 29 point, I forget exactly what it is. And then there's a mathematical formula you can do. As long as you have a fixed date, that will thereby lock in future dates. And that's the formula Mr. Camping used. And it's available. And this same person who reminded us of this formula, he understood that May 21 was correct and October 21 was correct, and Adar 15 this year is correct. So I'm hoping to learn this quickly and share it with everyone. But thank you. Thank you for your comments and for your question. I'd like to thank everyone for sharing tonight. And Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern time in this room for about an hour. But for now, I'm going to say good night, and may the Lord grant us his wisdom.